If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Here we are.
Yes, we are. For a time, we weren't here last week.
Yes.
We were both having physical malfunctions.
Yes, yes. Last week, we intended to do a live broadcast. For those of you who are listening regularly, we apologize. But between Elvira's oral surgery
yes.
and my, I guess it was a flu, I don't know.
It was something.
It was not possible for either of us to communicate well.
That would have been a real interesting point of reference.
And I still am not 100%.
Uh-huh.
My voice may sound a little more
husky
than usual. And I do have a lozenge in my mouth at the moment, so I apologize if you can hear that clickety-clackety on my teeth. Or if I start coughing, I will pull away from the microphone. But there is a chance of a little bit of that going out over the airwaves. Sorry.
See how honest we are.
Yes.
Must
be in my imperfections.
Truly. At this point, it's the only way to go, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're human. It's so much fun.
I know. Hey, you know, talking to people in the last week has been interesting about human frailties.
Mm-hmm.
So I will ask, obviously, the pertinent question that we always ask, mm-hmm. and it is, what was your week like, and how did you make it through?
Well, you know, I'm super behind on life.
Right.
Right. So I started to feel a little funky a week ago on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I was pretty much down for the count.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, it was, my partner pointed this out to me, which just irritates the bejesus out of me. My daughter had been sick. She brought this lovely illness into our home.
Right.
And I thought, oh, man, I'd love to just have a couple of days where I could lay around and do nothing but watch TV. And I said this out loud.
Mm-hmm.
My mistake.
Really?
I should have been more specific, you know. I'd love to have a few days of comfortable vacation where I'm completely 100% healthy and can just lounge about. But no.
No.
So the universe heard my prayer and gave me what I asked for. The downside to this little bug was I had a horrendous headache.
Uh-huh.
So for 2 days, I was just in constant pain, and it felt like it hurt too bad to watch TV.
Oh, dear.
Damn it.
I know.
That's the whole point of being sick, is to watch TV.
Exactly.
Anyway, so, you know, you get behind when you can't do anything. I had to reschedule a few of my clients. I said, oh, I'm really sick. I love you. I'm sorry. Tomorrow, oh, shit, still sick. How about the next day? Oh, you know what? Can I push you to just next week? So I had a rolling of reading clients and all that about. But I'm getting caught up.
Good.
I still have to file my taxes.
Yes.
You know, so I just feel a little frazzled because I am not on the ball as I normally would be.
I totally understand that.
Yeah, no. But, you know, can't really complain.
You're still standing and at least walking about. When you came in, you seemed a little spry and,
yeah. You
know, I mean.
Yeah, I feel good. It's just this little bit of
hick.
Of throat tickle that hasn't gone away yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Well, gee, I can talk. Not that I couldn't before. Of course, the problem was with the gauze stuck in the mouth to keep the bleeding. It sounded like, you know. And
Marlon Brando.
Yeah, I really was working on The Godfather. I was trying.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was one of those things that, as I said recently and also to Phoenix today, is that 30 years ago I had an impacted wisdom tooth taken out. And for the what happened, and I was a nursing mom at the time with a fairly newborn, about a year, I can't remember it being as dramatic. And this was pulling a tooth out. This was taking a tooth out. It wasn't excavating to get the impacted tooth out. So I was kind of wondering, you know, in the time that it has gone by, how I am not as looking at life like, oh, it's a lark, and I'll just keep going and going on. And now it's not that it took me completely out, but I realized I needed to rest.
Yeah.
I needed to just stop. It wasn't like I was going to, you know, the ever-ready bunny with the little batteries bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
So that was a humbling experience, to say the least. But other than that, you know, I was so excited because not only did I get a lot of clients at Milk and Honey for the Saturdays I've worked, which blessedly paid for all of the dental up to the point that I, you know, had the extractions. That was like, so that was a good one. But other than that, you know, we've had some drama in different places and we've had some things in the world out there. And the altar I chose for this one, which is altars, was a justice altar.
Mm-hmm.
And for many reasons. But there was just some things that happened during the week that really impacted me in terms of the world.
Yeah.
And
it's been rough out there for humans.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It has. My dogs don't think so. They're probably blissfully ignorant of the process, except that, obviously, you know, mom's spending more time on the couch. Oh, wow. Let's pile on her.
Yeah.
But, so that's it. But looking forward to tonight's subject, and obviously, we should get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, altars.
Altars.
Yay.
Woohoo.
What do we want to start with?
Well, so this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. You know, I have a book out there in the world that I helped to birds about altars. It's called Hoodoo Shrines and Altars, and it's actually specifically around the Hoodoo tradition, but altars are a thing that I've always loved to create.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in my home, but I've built many altars for public ritual. I often get kind of like a vision of how I see the thing happening, and it's like this exciting thing of building it and crafting it and putting it together. And I've done some workshops on altar building and blah, 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 you know. But the thing I always tell people is that I'm a Taurus with a Libra moon.
Mm-hmm.
So my sun and moon are both in Venus, and that means I like things to be pretty.
Yes.
I like things to be beautiful and pretty. And so that's part, and I mean, I'm joking, but I'm also serious.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I do have an aesthetic gift.
Right.
I just do, and I'm going to own that.
Good for you.
And so I feel like that, you know, that eye makes it part of the fun part of an altar.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find interesting in certain traditions of witchcraft, and especially in Wicca, you don't get the eye. It has to be this way, and it must face this direction, and the knife must be here, and the candle must be here, and it has to be this color.
Right.
It's great, and there's power in that, right? Because if we're all in this tradition all over the world, all building our altars this way. Wow, right?
Right.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like the joy and the playfulness and the experimentation and the creativity
mm-hmm.
that comes from creating your own sacred space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
There you go.
That's just my little thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a live-in boyfriend from the time that I ended my second marriage to when I met the gentleman who would be my third husband. Yes, I'm not Zsa Gabor, though. And all he told me, because I was obviously very much into this, by then, you know, I had stopped owning my store, but there were all these things I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked around, and it was like there was altars everywhere.
Yeah.
There was altars
yeah.
in all rooms.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me, and he goes, why do you have so many altars? You seem to have, you know, a way of doing that, and it's like dissipating your power. You should just stop doing that and, you know, like collect it inside of you. And I was horrified. You know, to me...
I'm glad that guy was just a boyfriend and not your third husband.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of other reasons why he didn't make it to the third husband
yeah.
level. But
so obviously doesn't get it.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He definitely had his drawbacks. But it was interesting to note that wherever I have gone, I have put altars up. And Phoenix can attest to it as she's sitting here in my dining area
mm-hmm.
and all the different altars that are floating around. Well... they're on surfaces. They're not floating.
Now, there's at least six,
yeah.
seven from where that I can see here from where I'm
yeah.
sitting right now. Maybe.
That one up there,
yeah.
So, yeah, that it's like, to me, people put little figurines down and,
yeah.
and make little, you know, things that they like to make pretty.
Yeah.
To me, altars are it.
Well, that's a great joke, right, that you'll know a pagan's living situation, or you'll know you're in a pagan's house because there's altars on every available surface.
Exactly. So we don't, you know, that's it. So altars are a very much part of my life, as much as, you know, you have your obvious, you know, because I have been in her house too, and it does have the same flavor.
Yeah.
You don't miss out on making sure there are things there that are either devotional or working.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually I was gifted this beautiful roll top desk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, one of those cool roll tops that's got lots of little cubbies
mm-hmm.
and drawers
mm-hmm.
and stuff. I love stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's become kind of my hoodoo altar space.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will admit it's not super traditionally hoodoo. I've got an Aphrodite and a Kuan Yin. But they help me. Aphrodite and I, like, that's, when I do love work for clients, I call on Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So she's on that part of my hoodoo space that is for my love work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do, you know, a lot of healing and uncrossing and things like that, and that's where I call on Kuan Yin. So I
mm-hmm.
have this sort of, anyway, blah, blah. But this whole roll-top desk is quite big and heavy, and it takes up a lot of space. And on this... the desk part of the roll top desk is where I have sort of candles always
mm-hmm.
burning and honey jars going and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the top part of the roll top is more of my
mm-hmm.
space. Like I'm teaching at a witch camp this summer and we're working with Ariadne and the Minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little shrine up there for the Minotaur and Ariadne.
Mm-hmm.
I'm communicating with them
mm-hmm.
and listening with them. So when I go to this retreat, I'm enmeshed, you know?
Right. Right.
And so, that's the big one in my
mm-hmm.
house because
mm-hmm.
it's always there. And the good part about the roll top is I can close it when people do come over that I may not want to see the work I have going.
Right. Right.
No.
Yeah. Well, see, and there are all these ways we make them.
Yeah.
You know, a way to blend in. It
yeah.
depends. You know, when they come to my house, they know they're going to come to a place that's got everything. And, you know, that I don't have very many people that I'm concerned about not knowing what I do or concerned about what I have.
Right.
But let's talk about how do you discuss building an altar or putting up something for a client that wants to do work?
Well, for those of you who are familiar with Catherine Ironwood and her teachings around hoodoo, she talks about lasagna, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to know the recipe
mm-hmm.
Before you start messing with it. You need to understand the origins.
Mm-hmm.
And that really got me thinking when I was working on the book, because
Catherine Ironwood is through Lucky Mojo is who published my book, right?
Uh-huh.
So she had a huge amount of influence, obviously, on how I wrote it. But I sort of think of it building an altar like a pizza,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
The crust is the first thing, and the crust is your surface.
Uh-huh.
So it could be a table. It could be a bench. It could be the corner of a desk. It could be this whole room.
Uh-huh.
But the foundation, the thing that you're putting your altar on is the crust,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
So that's the first step. And it could be literally anything,
uh-huh.
you know.
Uh-huh.
You could have a little stand in the garden. You could have a corner of your kitchen counter. Like
right.
literally anything. Let yourself be creative.
Right.
And then the sauce comes next. So what is this altar for?
Uh-huh.
Is it for a specific goddess? Is it for a spell I'm working on? What is it for?
Uh-huh.
And then I put something down. Actually, that's not true. First I cleanse.
That's it. Good idea.
First I cleanse. So whether that's saging or using Florida water or some other neutralizer,
uh-huh.
I neutralize the space,
uh-huh.
especially if I've bought it at a thrift store, which I get a lot of stuff from.
Uh-huh. I think we all do. That's one of the reasons why I avoid thrift stores with a plague passion, because I know I walk out of there. It's like bookstores,
oh, yeah.
you know. Those are my two downfalls.
Yeah.
But so then you cleanse it.
Cleanse it. Then you start adding the things that are going to feed the energy of why you're building it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, for example, if you're going to build an altar for a love spell,
uh-huh.
then you might consider putting down some powder,
uh-huh.
some love me powder, or some other powder that's been charged with a specific intention,
uh-huh.
or maybe some rose petals that have been dried, or be creative.
Uh-huh.
You know, it could be anything, but it's the first intention. It's the first step. It's the first energetic of
uh-huh.
this is what this space is for,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
And then you have a choice. Do you want an altar cloth or not to altar cloth, right? You don't have
to have or to have not.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're going to, then that's another thing that you can have correspondence.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've been trying to uh-huh. pull.
Hilarious.
Another thing that fits into the correspondence. So
uh-huh.
a red or pink for love, or one with little hearts on it,
uh-huh.
or, you know, whatever. Again, uh-huh. this is an opportunity for you to be creative.
Right.
Right. Then you add all the tchotchkes.
Uh-huh.
You know, the statue or the candles or the incense bowl or the stones or whatever. I mean,
uh-huh.
that's really when it becomes an opportunity for you to be super creative and to
uh-huh.
put it out in a way that you find aesthetically pleasing. And
uh-huh.
I think that is the most important part of creating an altar. Unless you're creating an altar for a specific tradition, which we can talk about in a minute.
Right.
But if you're building an altar for a spell, if you're building an altar for a shrine, if you're creating a space for a specific deity,
uh-huh.
you want to find it pleasant to
uh-huh.
look at.
Uh-huh.
You want to enjoy spending time there.
Uh-huh.
And so arranging your stuff in a way that looks pretty,
uh-huh.
arranging your stuff in a way that you find pleasing, and having items that
uh-huh.
you find pleasing to
uh-huh.
look at. So, you know, the thing that I often get asked about is, okay, well, what about money?
Uh-huh.
You know, I want to build a shrine to Hecate and I don't have $100 to drop on some beautiful statue.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to.
No, you don't.
I found a little wooden statue at a thrift store for
uh-huh.
$1.
Wow.
It's just an old lady,
uh-huh.
right? And I think originally she probably had a rucksack or something
uh-huh.
that's been broken off. It looks like Baba Yaga.
Uh-huh.
It looks like Baba Yaga. So she's become my Baba Yaga statue. I cleaned her off. I called on
mm-hmm.
Baba Yaga. I said, here, this is for you. I love you. I honor you. Please spend time with me here.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, again, be creative.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there to the thrift stores and find candle holders that you like, or plates or bowls, or you can even find cauldrons
right.
or cast iron dishes
mm-hmm.
to burn
mm-hmm.
incense and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be an expensive process.
No, and I think that the most exciting part is finding those things.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when I used to go up and visit my friend in Oregon, we would go to a couple of these stores. They weren't really thrift stores, but they were used
yeah.
things. They were antique stores,
right.
but they weren't like the high-end line antiques. And, oh, my gosh, you know, to this day I have things, and actually it's very funny because I have a chest. When I pared my house space down,
yeah.
I had to pare down, oh, my goodness, I had to pare down, yes, the altars.
Right.
So I had to put things away. Well, just recently I had to bring something out, and I opened the chest up, and I luckily found what I was looking for, which is my Athena statue. But I realized how much of the stuff I had put in there, and it wasn't like I opened everything up, but I realized that that's a lot of those things are things I got when I was there. And it was amazing how, you know, they're little treasures.
And depending on how creative you are,
you
can find a statue that is just a generic statue. There's lots of generic statues out there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if there's a specific goddess that you're working with or you want to build a shrine to, then you say, hey, lady, I'm working on this shrine for you. Help me find the right statue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will, and you'll find the right statue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can paint it
mm-hmm.
or put a bronze on it so it looks metallic if
mm-hmm.
that's what you're into.
Mm-hmm.
You can adorn it. You can put clothes on it. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's lots of ways to decorate a sort of ho-hum, not-so-impressive statue that you may pick up
right.
at the thrift store and
right.
make something beautiful.
Exactly. Actually, in the more ancient times, they would
yeah.
put clothing on
yep.
their statues. And then each year they would clean the statue. They would take the old clothing off and burn it, and the new clothing they'd put on. So there was a whole ritual around that
exactly.
process.
Exactly.
So,
and, you know, the shrine, I keep referring to shrine. So in my mind, shrine is a space you've set up for a deity.
Uh-huh.
And an altar is a space where you're working.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, those terms can be used. Like, an altar can be used interchangeably for either a working
uh-huh.
space, a spell space, or a shrine.
Right.
But in my mind, a shrine is specifically for a deity.
Right.
And I forgot where I was going with that.
It's okay. We'll find another place. It'll come back. But I think, well, and it's true because, you know, the in the Srega tradition, it's the Lare is the, you know, the house spirit.
Right.
The spirit that guards and is part of the family of the house. And they have a shrine. And, it's, you know, that does have certain things. And it has to have pillars. And it has to have a certain depth, you know, in terms of that. But truthfully, it is set up specifically for that, and they offer, you know, food to
yeah.
the spirits. It's milk and, believe it or not, milk and honey.
Sure.
And so it's fascinating because I was looking at, when we were talking about doing this, I started looking at the different traditions
yeah.
that I have, you know, participated in or that I have been interested in, and I found that that was an interesting one. I sort of have a shrine of that nature. It's interesting that the particular Lare is a statue I got at the Renaissance Fair, and she's the angel of wisdom is how she was presented, but she's really pretty, and I actually found a way to display her and put her and honor her in the place I'm in. But it was just weird how when I started doing that tradition and working on it, what came up.
Right.
But so shrines are. Shrines, I think we would classify them more like devotional altars.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, you know, with a shrine, with a devotional altar, a space that's dedicated to a specific entity, to me, this is so my opinion, it's much more important to keep that space active,
mm-hmm.
right? If you build this beautiful shrine, this beautiful altar to this goddess, you want to foster that relationship, and that means spending time there.
Mm-hmm.
That means leading offerings on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
That means keeping it clean, and that's all part of developing the relationship with that goddess. And those, I mean, really, if you've had a long relationship with a goddess, it's like any other relationship. It's so easy to take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to let it get dusty. Or go, oh, Bridget knows that I love her. I have a Bridget altar right now. I have a few of them, but this one specifically, I always give her whiskey, and I haven't in like a month because she knows I love her. That's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've got major guilt about the fact that I ran out of whiskey for Bridget, you know?
Yeah.
It feels disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like if you're going to build a devotional altar, if you're going to build a shrine for a deity,
mm-hmm.
you better be prepared to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a drag, and it
mm-hmm.
can be time that you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was your lover, your partner, your child, and you weren't setting aside time for that relationship, you're going to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same thing with deity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make time for that relationship, or it's not going to be a healthy relationship,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like shrines are a little bit more intense
right.
than a working altar space
right.
or a ritual space, you know, because those are temporary. They come and they go. You do your spell, and then you take the altar down.
Right.
You do the ritual for Beltane, and then you take your Beltane altar down or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, but if you're dedicated to Bridget and you stop giving her whiskey,
mm-hmm.
you might be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Oopsie.
I think I might have to stop at the store on the way home.
I think so.
I have Canadian whiskey, but I feel weird about giving her Canadian whiskey. You know, like, she'd be like, where's the real stuff?
Where's my stuff? Totally understand. Interesting is that one of the things that when I was doing some research about altars is that there is an actual constellation called Altar that is in
really?
The sky. Yes, it is.
Huh.
And that it's called the Feminine Constellation, and that was where the earlier matriarchal societies would model their spaces in alignment with that constellation.
Wow.
I know. I was like, are we really kidding me? But that was one of the things, and it obviously was the symbol of the Earth Mother's regenerative powers in the womb, and, you know, so the altar became that part with the constellation being her stellar part.
Huh.
Yeah, I was intrigued by that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that was something I wanted to share because obviously as we go down into the different parts of history and we go into different layers of religious affiliations,
mm-hmm.
we have Christianity was basically, you know, the altar. It was interesting that in the Bible
mm-hmm.
is a point of reference of relics, you know, being buried in the altar, that part
right.
of that was in the altar space.
Right.
And that was, it was kind of a little bit of a missed point of reference because, again, going from aligning it with the stellar constellation altar to putting something in the actual altar, they kind of
mm-hmm.
shifted it a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a lot of sacred geometry to play here, too,
mm-hmm.
especially when we look at how Catholicism and different Christian faiths, and Judaism, too, they have a very specific way that temples are set up.
Exactly.
And it's very mathematical, sacred geometry. There's very interesting, you know, if you look at the Freemasons and
mm-hmm.
their temples and things like that, it's,
mm-hmm.
it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're like a math geek and into that, it's totally worth doing some research into.
Right,
too.
Right.
There is a, everything has, especially with the Catholics, because they're so pagan.
yep.
You know, everything has a specific size,
mm-hmm.
shape,
mm-hmm.
and measurement,
mm-hmm.
and the, you know, the cup has to be this size, and the stem of the cup has to be this size, right?
Right.
Very
right.
detailed in their altar.
Right.
Very, very detailed. Things have to be set, and so specific away.
Right.
And that's like Gardnerian Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
When you set up your altar in Gardnerian Wicca, it has to be in a very specific way. This thing has to go here and here
mm-hmm.
and here. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and most often in Wicca and in modern witchcraft too, people set their altars up facing the east.
Right.
Right. And I always, that always was weird to me. Like, why do you care where I set up my altar? But the east is the beginning. It's where the sun rises, right?
Right.
It's that new, fresh energy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a regenerative quality of the east, right?
Right?
Every day we have a new chance, a new, fresh start in
right.
the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet there is also a very strong tradition of putting the altars in the north.
Yes.
And I know that, again, different traditions, different branches, different cultures, you know, you have the Scotch, the Irish, you have the Scandinavians, they all have certain things that they did, and it was specific, but if you think about where they are on the planet and what was more important at the time in their culture,
right?
Why? I mean, we're talking, Italy is the Mediterranean,
right?
Okay, and you've got all those Mediterranean things with sun and all those concepts of
yeah.
where it is, whereas the northern Northern Europeans, it's more north. It's cold. It's north. It's the, you know, where the ancestors are, that kind of a thing.
Well, and that's the whole thing, too, right? Where are the ancestors in your tradition? Some traditions, the ancestors are in the north.
Uh-huh.
Some traditions, the land of the dead is to the west.
Uh-huh.
So there's all these superstitions about which way you face when your circle is cast.
Right.
You shouldn't be facing the dead.
Right.
Because then you might be lured, right?
Right.
So if your dead reside in the north, your back would be to the north,
mm-hmm.
right? The ancestors stand behind you.
Right.
Or if in your system the dead are in the west, then you would set your altar up facing the east.
Mm-hmm.
The dead are standing behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's also this interesting connection to the directions
mm-hmm.
based on where that system believes
is set up for.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's what you feel. I mean, when you're walking into this and you're saying, well, this is what I'm going to do and I feel this, that's really, I think, important. If you want to look up your ancestry, if you want to know where your roots are and you start feeling drawn to that, then you'll need to modify the feel of what you want to what your culture is if you choose to.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And interesting is that I also, I guess it's kind of going back, but the woman is the altar of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the church says.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the church belief.
Huh.
But it was very interesting because that was what one of the main people, Augustus, in the church, you know, it was saying that the woman is the altar of heaven.
Interesting.
I know, kind of, you know, back,
mm-hmm.
they waffled, I think, back and forth at the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't think they had as rigid of how they saw things at the beginning as they do
right.
down the road.
Yeah.
So,
it's interesting. You know, I was not raised in a Christian household, and I find Catholic churches to be super cool.
Yeah, so do I.
Super cool. And I just was watching a video earlier today about Grace Cathedral, which is a beautiful church in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a labyrinth inside and outside, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Two different labyrinths. But
actually, they have two different labyrinths outside.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Neat.
I've
only seen one of them outside.
I thought there were two. There was one inside, and then there was another one, and I thought they had another one.
It's possible.
Anyway.
But the thing I like about the Catholic, there's just something about a Catholic church, and especially, I think, Grace Cathedral, because it is in San Francisco, so it's a little bit more of a progressive
mm-hmm.
part of the world, and
mm-hmm.
it seems so open. It feels so interfaith to me, even
mm-hmm.
though they hold Catholic Mass there every
mm-hmm.
Sunday. But they have these little pockets around Grace Cathedral, and I know other bigger Catholic churches do this too, but there's the Mary Magdalene Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there in the Grace Cathedral, there's a chapel specifically for those who died during the AIDS crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's just something about going to this sacred place, going up to this sacred altar that is taken care of beautifully by
mm-hmm.
the devotion of the people who are in that church,
mm-hmm.
and lighting a candle. I'm just sitting in meditation. Like,
mm-hmm.
there is... I wish there were pagan temples like that, you know, that were easy to get to, because most of the places that have built pagan temples are in the middle of nowhere.
That's true.
Yeah. But there's just something very soul-fulfilling,
mm-hmm.
you know, to go into Mary Magdalene Temple and
mm-hmm.
sit and know that this is a place for women and to
mm-hmm.
light a candle and
mm-hmm.
to be in that space. It's
mm-hmm.
really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, well, and they're very much, I mean, again, when you go in... I've been in the Greek Orthodox, it's the Russian Orthodox, I'm sorry, church here in Santa Rosa.
Oh, yeah.
There's,
love that.
And you walk in and, you know, I mean, obviously they don't have seats. And they have benches on the walls for old people if they can't stand. But of the different icons, the painted icons, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, to me, going in and looking at their philosophy in practice.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the churches that we have, whether it's the more modern ones or the cathedrals or the temples or the, you know, traditions that are there. It just, and I guess we, even when I went into the European ones, it was fascinating.
Yeah.
there's such a, and I'm not talking about antiquity, I'm just talking about the feel.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that when I look at altars in terms of that, I look at my home as that. It's a cathedral. It's a, it's a sacred temple.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's part of why maybe I do so much here, because I may not have little sections that you can walk into.
Yeah.
But you can set up different things that represent, are important to you.
Absolutely. And anyone's home can be that way. And that's sort of how we hold Milk and Honey as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing I tell someone who's, you know, just, we just got a new employee at Milk and Honey. And this Milk and Honey is a temple.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are there, when you are working, you are the priestess of that temple.
Mm-hmm.
And we have shrines, several different shrines for different purposes. We have a community altar where people come and light candles and write petitions and prayers and, you know, we're working that energy, and that's the same, I think, with a lot of pagan folks and witches' homes, is we have these shrines, these areas that are dedicated to specific spirits, specific energies, places where we're working spells, and so our home becomes a temple, and really it should. I mean, it's a sacred space.
You come in from wherever, and you become. I haven't quite gotten the take your shoes off and walk in and that kind of thing. I can understand it. I understand it on many different levels, practical and otherwise. But I guess the way that our life runs, I don't practice that.
Yeah.
And my home has to accept that as part of it. But so what would we put on an altar if we were doing just a standard, you know, pagan?
Should we take a break and answer that when we come back?
I think it would be a great idea.
So what would you put on an altar?
Yes.
To be answered in a couple of minutes.
Truly.
All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. Bit of Boxy with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific. Add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
Well, that's quick.
That was quick.
Yes. Putting something on an altar.
Yes.
We talked about whatever cloth and whatever way of putting it together and statuary.
Yeah.
I know that we talked about all of the tools that we have built up over the various episodes.
Former radio shows, yep.
So you would definitely consider a cauldron or a chalice or your, you know, for the element of water and, you know, your athame and your wand and...
Yeah.
I don't know about the sword, though. You know, I mean, that's, you know, she have a big...
If it fits, sure.
Sure. And then you'd have your stones and your earth aspect and salt. And so I did find out one thing, you know, and it's funny because I always have learned to do, you know, the salt bowl, and then, you know, you your circle with the, you know, how you cast your circle. But one of the things I was reading was about the salt and how they put it in a manner around the actual altar working space to contain the energy, not to protect it from negative beings.
Right.
And that was, it was, you know, again, a very simple refocus.
Yeah.
Instead of that, which obviously so much fear that we can put up, but if you think about it, you're doing a container rather than to contain the energy, to make it more powerful.
Yeah.
So when you set your altar up, and however you choose to set it up, whatever direction and all that, you're containing an energy on that altar.
Right.
And like for me, I'm thinking of it as this beacon of light or beacon mm-hmm. of energy that you start working with and pulsing with to bring in whatever that situation is that you're working on.
I think that creating a circle can be looked at both ways, and uh-huh. I definitely have heard, I think this is a tradition thing too, like uh-huh. some traditions are very clear, like we are building a container to keep our stuff contained,
uh-huh.
so we have kind of like we're building a battery, right?
Right.
We're building up the energy, and then when we determine it's time, we will release that energy.
Uh-huh.
Where other folks or traditions or systems are creating a circle, creating a container to keep forces out.
Uh-huh.
The belief is when we create sacred space and we're doing ritual or we're doing spells or whatever, we become sort of like a beacon, and it draws in the attention of
uh-huh.
entities that we may not want paying
uh-huh.
attention to us, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what my personal opinion is on that. I think I go back and forth, but it's definitely something to determine before you create your circle.
Right.
Do you think you need to create a protective barrier, or are you creating a container, or both,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's going to impact how you create your container.
Right.
Yeah.
And obviously creating altars or working devotional altars within your space. Now, when I work with clients, a lot of times they are doing things with members of the family or other
yeah.
people that they don't want to know. So it isn't like they can put it in their bedroom and nobody will go in. So a lot of times I will downplay the specifics. I will give them a particular candle, just light it. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to have a color. If you really like it, fine, but you know, light it, you know, do this, and you can put, you know, some things under a cloth so that it's
yeah.
not necessarily visible. And sometimes
yeah.
people have to do them so that, you know, they're, as we have found, we go to places where you can't burn candles. So LED lights are the secondary best thing
yeah.
in the world.
And I think that comes down again to what is the purpose of the altar I'm creating, right? Am
uh-huh.
I doing this ritual this one time and then I'm going to take this down and dismantle it? Or am
uh-huh.
I building a shrine to Hecate or
uh-huh.
whatever?
Uh-huh.
You know, and having a really clear idea of what it is that the intention behind the space that you're building.
Right.
Some altars are temporary and are only going to be up for the hour it takes you to do your ritual
uh-huh.
for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
some altars you can, I like altars that are hidden in plain sight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially protection altars or things you create in your home that someone might walk right past and have no idea that that's doing magic for
right.
your household.
Right.
I love that. And also, little tiny altars that you've built in a matchbox or
mm-hmm.
in a tin for
mm-hmm.
mints
mm-hmm.
that you take and that travels with you.
Right.
You know, these are always, altars don't have to just be stationary and huge and enormous things, you know,
right.
that like the temple.
Yeah.
It can be a matchbox with
right.
a pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's interesting because it's movable. You, that reminded me, I do that with my car.
Yeah.
You know, my car becomes an altar,
yeah.
and it becomes a movable altar. It's sort of like, you know, a spaceship, but not quite. And, you know, I don't necessarily have different things that are very obvious. I mean, I have a ton of stuffed animals in the back or dragons, and,
right.
and I had a shell that had, you know, an abalone shell that had all these different sacred things in it that were like part of the spells that I, you know, and the devotional things I would put in there.
Right.
And it's been very interesting when I did that, what I was thinking at the time, because I was driving to Oregon and back. I was driving a lot.
Yep.
So I wanted it for the protection, but I also felt that it was a way of making it my chariot, and I was,
right.
you know, sacredly doing this journey, which was, for the most part, I was doing it to work with the people up in Oregon that I worked with. So, but it can be anywhere. It can be anything.
Absolutely.
It is. I mean, we've obviously, as I said previously, we've given tools, we've given structures, but steak knife or a regular butter knife or anything that you feel you want to put in a specific area can be the part of what you're building.
Right.
It really is the intent of what you're trying to do and how you can do it within the context of what you're doing. Sometimes it's, you know, too public.
Right.
And people don't feel they want to do it that way.
Well, and if you're doing spell work or some sort of ritual that needs to stay hidden, I mean, that's part of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to carry around a billboard that says, I'm working a spell right now, ask me all about it. You know, that's diffusing the energy of your spell, which we talked about all of this on our show on creating a spell.
Right, right.
But you don't want that. You want it to be quiet and hidden and just for you or the group of people that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
So making it something that's hidden in plain sight or something that's small or, you know, just having a candle, you know. There are so many decorative candles. I admit that I love Target. I admit it. And if you go to any Target in the freaking world, there is a whole aisle of nothing but candles of different sizes, shapes, colors, and scents. It's
exactly.
Like cheesy candle overload.
It is. It is.
So people are decorating their homes with candles, never with the intention to burn them, right? It's just for pretties. There's no reason that you couldn't have a candle in your home that looks just like a decoration. A lovely tchotchke that's on your kitchen table as a centerpiece. But you know that that's something else. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And I think that is, when you talk about, you know, when we thought about altars as being a show, and I was thinking, well, yeah, I mean, how do you explain an altar? I mean, you can only say so many things because then you have, you know, like visuals, like this is what you do and, you know,
right.
play and all that. But I think it's what do we feel an altar is? An altar can be something special, it can be something ordinary. It can be in a window, as on a windowsill. It can be, you know, believe it or not, I have what would be considered an altar out front. I have a bird bath, and I have, you know, the icons of the sun and moon, and then I have, you know, something else over here and the plants. And, you know, I had a statue until one of the myriad things that happened in this place, somebody stole it, which I thought was hysterical because it's a concrete statue.
I gotta say, man, people who steal stuff from metaphysical shops or things that are clearly magical in some way
are stupid.
Bad.
You know,
bad.
I mean, just you cannot believe the dynamics. I mean, it isn't exactly the fact that somebody's going to do bad juju. I mean, they can and probably do.
Yeah.
But the idea of what that energy is imbued with,
right.
whatever it is, it doesn't matter, and how that energy has been stolen and what it does.
Right.
It's just like,
I always think about, this is sort of a non sequitur, but whatever. That's what we do.
Yeah, we do.
I always think about the people who know that there's a curse from Pele if you take any of the rocks from Hawaii and how people still do it, even though they've heard the story of people who leave Hawaii having stolen rocks and then mail them back.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've had nothing but bad luck since they left.
Yeah.
You just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Trust me.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, it's funny because when I worked with a kahuna and I wanted to do something and I asked him because I figure who best to ask permission.
Right.
You know, and he looked at me and, you know, he was kind of smiling and it was just one of those where you know what to do. And I realized, well, I work with fire. I am a fire priestess, and I kind of did my bargaining with Pele.
Yeah.
Because there was a point where I went, but you are part of me, and I need to, for you to be with me is important. I can be with, metaphysically I can be with you,
yeah.
But the physical
yeah.
is really like, hi. And I did the same thing when I went to Sicily, because Mount Etna,
yeah.
The lava and all that,
yeah.
and it'll, and I mean, I did the same thing. It was like, I don't take you unless we have a real nice discussion.
Right.
And then, because this is where my heritage is, my roots on one side, we kind of discussed the pros and cons of it.
Right.
So, but it was interesting because, yeah, man, Kahu told me how many people,
yeah.
of even his own students, would
right.
mail them back to him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's funny.
And it's true, but it's in anything. It's, if you ask permission.
Right.
And treat it with sacredness.
Right.
I think it would be, again, the same process.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a non sequitur, but it does, it comes back to the fact of deity.
Yes.
And sacred objects that you will either bring home or take with you for a purpose and you work with.
Right. Yeah, and if you are building a shrine, if you're working with a deity, having something on your altar that connects to that deity, yeah, a statue is great, but what else?
Right.
And if you can get a hold of something that is from the origins of that goddess, like there are candles you can purchase. If you can't, for example, Bridget, right,
mm-hmm.
who I owe whiskey to, you can get a candle that's been lit from her sacred flame
mm-hmm.
in Kildare.
Mm-hmm.
And what the belief is, if you have a candle that's been lit from that candle, from that flame, any candle you light with that candle now also carries the energy of the light of Kildare. So
mm-hmm.
it's like a pay it forward type
mm-hmm.
of fire. So I have a candle that's
oh,
been
neat.
Lit from the light of Kildare, right?
Uh-huh.
And that is on my Bridget altar. So it connects right back to
mm-hmm.
Ireland, connects
uh-huh.
right back to where this goddess still is alive in the landscape,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you can find a way, get a little bit of dirt, get a little bit of water, get a little bit of vegetation or
mm-hmm.
something that connects to the origins of
mm-hmm.
that deity,
mm-hmm.
even better,
mm-hmm.
even better.
Yeah, well, and that's when I went to Sicily, I actually did find the shrine of Hecate.
Yeah.
And from there, I did take dirt, and it is with her. So, yes, very much so. I feel the strength of what we have going. So,
absolutely.
But very quickly, one of the things I wanted to share, and we may wind up doing a special section on, I don't know, geomancy is a term for the sacredness of place and
yeah.
how you work with it, either
yeah.
feng shui or geomancy for the Europeans. And the Hawaiians really don't have a statement of geomancy. They call it the mystical being.
Mm.
So they fashion it on the turtle. And so when you're setting up your altars or you're setting up sacred space in your home, one of the things that I usually work with is talking to people about where in their house is their financial corner. Where is their
right.
love corner? And then working with that. Or, it isn't just the place in the house as a house, but in a room. It's whatever entrance you come in is your main entrance is the mouth of the turtle. And from there, you orientate everything else.
Mm.
And rather than try to just...
And do you get to determine which area is connected to what, or is it a set thing like feng shui?
It's a set thing.
Okay.
So if you come in and you walk in the door,
mm-hmm.
the furthest left corner is your finance corner.
That's true in feng shui.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the furthest right corner is union, marriage, partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe that's community in feng shui.
Okay. And if you're going to go what's between, and it's funny because what between finance and union is status and fame, the position in life.
Interesting.
Okay. And that would be actually directly opposite your front, the main entrance.
Right.
Okay. So if you're going to go from the union, which is the farthest right, the next farthest corner would be outward assistance for other people you want to get help from,
yep.
which then between that corner and the union corner is children,
hmm.
new thoughts and ideas, birthing. Mm-hmm. All right. So if you go back to the finance corner, which is the farthest left, and you go up to the corner that is the farthest, you know, which is left.
Yeah.
That next corner is wisdom and knowledge. And between wisdom and knowledge, that's family.
Nice.
And, you know, you would put it in that format. And it was interesting because technically there should be only one way in and one way out. And if we all know how most of, unless we're in an apartment, which has no balcony,
right?
We always have extra doors. So you have to be aware that you make one entrance your main entrance. And from that is the case. So if people only come in from their back door,
yeah,
then they need to reorientate it from that.
So it, like in feng shui, if you have something in a not great place, like in feng shui, the toilet
uh-huh.
is like a terrible
uh-huh.
energy
uh-huh.
sucker, which
yeah.
makes sense, right?
Yeah. It sucks stuff down.
You're flushing shit. So in feng shui, there are things you can do to sort of mitigate,
mm-hmm.
help improve that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true in the Hawaiian system?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. The same. It follows a similar path.
Which makes sense, right?
Yeah, because first of all, you know, you close the door or keep the door as close as possible. Put the toilet seat down. You know, there are things about putting curtains or beading around, which is interesting because most of us, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, that was very popular. But it's a way to break the energy up.
Yeah.
You know, you want to break the energy up and not have it going, just like why you put crystals in the windows.
Mm-hmm.
If, for instance, you have large windows, you try to put crystals in the windows to break up the energy instead of like a fire hose energy coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You break it up with those crystals. That's the lead crystals, not just crystals.
Yeah.
And the same idea of stuck energy in corners,
mm-hmm.
you know, little streamers or gold or,
right.
you know, red.
Right, are no good in
yeah.
feng shui.
Feng shui.
Anything with a hard edge.
Hard edge,
yeah.
Not good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, they're very, you know, and then the different things like water and putting things into the different areas to make things flow.
Mm-hmm.
He was very interesting on how he had a sit and literally go over different houses that we would be given and feel. We weren't allowed to douse in the sense of like pendulum. We had to
yeah.
feel the energy and where it was stuck.
Huh.
And from that purpose, of course, learn how to balance it, manage it, change it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for altars, that would be, you know, the main thing about where altars go is what are you trying to do?
Right.
You know, so using the concept of Hawaiian or geomancy or feng shui,
nice.
The same concept of where you want to put it.
Yeah.
If
it comes back to the foundation of virtually everything we talk about ever,
mm-hmm.
What's your intention?
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of a, you know, we may want to do something later on,
yeah.
you know, placements and different systems.
Mm-hmm.
Because they all have a general idea, general way of looking at it. It's just how they... I think how many rules and regulations versus, you know, not.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Just a few minutes left
yes.
already. That went fast.
I know.
So if you read any of the marketing materials that we put out about today's show,
mm-hmm.
there was an opportunity to win a free book.
Yay!
Hoodoo Shrines and Altars by Phoenix Lafay. That's me. So the way that we're going to do this, I have three free copies. So if you go to witchpriestesscauldron.com and you go to our Ask a Witch page and put in your name and your email, I will pick the first three emails I get to get a copy of my book for free. And I'll even ship it to you for free. Oh, nice.
You are. That
anyway,
is so nice.
So, yeah, go to our website. And on top of that, go to our website, witchpriestesscauldron.com, and go to our Ask a Witch page and put in a question, because we're going to continue to do that segment
mm-hmm.
pretty regularly, the Ask a Witch segment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'd like a free reading online or on air,
mm-hmm.
or if you have a weird, wild, or wonderful question about witchcraft or paganism that you'd like us to banter
mm-hmm.
about, put that in and you'll be on the list for the next Ask a Witch show.
And we do banter well.
We do.
Yes.
So it's what we do.
And we have a festival.
A festival?
Coming up.
Yes.
And this one is?
In May on the weekend of the 13th and 14th is the Hoodoo Heritage Festival, which happens in Forestville, California at Lucky Mojo. And although I'm not presenting this year, I am helping behind the scenes keep the presenters organized and on time, because that's what I do.
She does a good job.
A lot of fun. You get so much free stuff. It's
mm-hmm.
ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
including goodie bags, books, and food.
Yes.
Plus, you get to hang out with all of your favorites from the Association of Readers and Root Workers, like Professor Charles Porterfield and Catherine Ironwood, and on and on and on, Nadia. Who else is going to be there this year?
Madam Pamita, we're going to have Miss Aida,
mm-hmm.
we are going to have Deacon Millett.
Right.
Some of these people have presented in the past, they have
yep.
written books,
right.
so, you know, there
and
are...
You can get readings.
And you will be able to get readings, yes.
So, yeah, so I'll be there Saturday and Sunday. Elvira will be there Sunday.
Yes.
We'll be doing readings and hanging out and having fun. It's definitely a good time, so check it out. Go to the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church website to get
yes.
more information.
Definitely.
And on that note, it's 7 o'clock.
I know. Now, yeah. next week, we are going to be doing Inanna and Arishkigel.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yep.
And I'm going to sing for you next week.
Oh, goody.
Because there's a really great song for Inanna.
I think this is going to be ostentatiously great.
Well, that's how we are, Elvira.
I know.
We are ostentatiously great.
We are.
All right.
Thanks.
Well,
tuning in.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.